Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to the Tattered Cover. I just want to thank you all for coming out tonight. Mike Lamp is here from Colorado Public Radio, and he is going to introduce our author tonight. So please help me welcome Mike.
Thank you. David Isay is the creator of StoryCorps, which you can hear on Colorado Public Radio, where I work, on Friday mornings on our news station. We have a news service and a classical music service. And our operation, I'll tell you, on Friday mornings comes to a halt when StoryCorps is about to come on the air. And if you listen to StoryCorps, you know what I mean. Those stories are so sweet and so funny and so touching and so memorable that you really stop what you're doing to listen to them. And it turns out that those stories are as much a pleasure to read as they are to hear on the radio. There's already one collection of StoryCorps stories called Listening is an Act of Love. And now there's a new one all about moms. And you know that that's just got to be the sweetest. And here to share some of those stories and talk about how they came about, please welcome David Isay.
So happy to be here tonight. Thank you all for coming out. And thank you to Colorado Public Radio for sponsoring this event with us and the Tattered Cover. This is about the most beautiful bookstore I've ever seen. It's great to be here. I'm curious. Now, I know we have one person from the book here. Is there anyone else who's in this book who is here? Because that sometimes happens at these readings, which is strange. Okay. Who here, has anybody here participated in StoryCorps? Oh, great. And who listens on Friday mornings on Public Radio? Okay. And who has no idea what StoryCorps is or why they've been dragged here? Okay, we always have a couple of those. Thank you for coming. StoryCorps is a very simple idea that started 6.5 years ago in Grand Central Terminal. We put a booth there where you make an appointment and you can bring anybody who you want to honor by listening to and recording their story. You can bring your grandmother, your mom, your bus driver, a friend. You go to this booth and you're met by a facilitator who works for StoryCorps who brings you inside the booth and closes the door. And you're in this kind of sacred space. The lights are low. And you sit at a table across from, say, your grandmother. And the facilitator's in the corner in front of 2 CD burners. And for 40 minutes, you talk and you listen. Most people ask kind of big life questions. How do you want to be remembered? What are the most important lessons you've learned in life? A lot of people cry in the booth. A lot of crying in the booth. And at the end of 40 minutes, 2 CDs have been burned. One goes home with you. The other stays with us and becomes part of a collection at the Library of Congress. So your great, 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 great grandkids can someday get to know your grandmother through her voice and story. I'm so happy to see so many people participate in StoryCorps here tonight. It's great. I'm going to play a bunch of stories. I have enough stories to keep you here all night. I'm not going to do that. I'm also happy to answer questions about StoryCorps. But the underpinning ideas of StoryCorps probably wouldn't surprise you. The idea that our stories, the stories of everyday people, of our friends, of our neighbors, of our parents, are more interesting and more important than the kind of celebrity sludge we're fed 24 hours a day. The importance of listening, coming to a booth, bringing someone to this booth, and listening to them, listening to their story, tells them that they matter and won't be forgotten, which is all any of us really wants to know. as Mike said, our first collection was called Listening is an Act of Love. And we put that together after we recorded our first 10,000 stories. We've now recorded about 30,000 stories with 60,000 people, because people come to the booth in pairs, and put our first theme book together, which is called Mom. And it was pretty obvious from the very beginning of StoryCorps that if we were going to do a theme book, the first one should be about moms, because moms are talked about in almost every interview that's been done as part of StoryCorps. And I thought I'd just start by playing a story that was recorded in the very first days of StoryCorps in Grand Central Terminal. This was probably within the first week after we opened. And it's a mom story. It's a 10-year-old young woman named Caitlin Seaver, who came to the booth with her mom, Lynn. 10 years old, we've learned the hard way, is about the youngest that anyone should be in the booth. Under that, it can get a little bit unruly. But 10 years old is good, as you'll hear. And Caitlin used the opportunity to interview her mom, as often, so often people do, to have a conversation that they don't normally get to have, to ask questions you don't normally get to ask. Caitlin's mom is a lesbian, and this is what a piece of their 40-minute conversation. So this is Caitlin Seaver and her mom, Lynn, in StoryCorps, in week one of StoryCorps.
I'm Caitlin. I'm 10, and today is the 10th, and right now I'm being interviewed by my mom, and I'm also interviewing my mom, too.
How would you describe yourself?
I describe myself as nice, beautiful, caring, can be stubborn, picky about friends.
What do you want to see yourself do when you're a grown-up? What do you imagine? What would make you happy?
I think I might want to be straight with a nice husband, and I think I would like to travel quite a bit. But of course, I don't have any idea what it's like to have kids, because I am a kid myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How has being a parent changed you?
Oh, my God. Being a parent has made me be much more responsible and made me really think about someone other than myself. I mean, can I tell you a little secret?
Yeah.
I used to always worry about dying. I used to have this, like, huge fear of dying.
Brain bug.
Yeah, I had this huge brain bug. And when you came into my life, the brain bug just flew out the door.
Bye-bye.
I know. And I think it really was because I stopped, like, having all this focus on myself, you know, like me. Suddenly there was you.
You know, this thing's really helping me, because there are some things which I was curious about, and now this recording thing makes me really think that whatever you're saying is true.
Yeah, well, this is very important, this recording. There's no point not to tell the truth.
How many partners did you have before Anita?
Well, okay, I had male partners, and I also had female partners.
I know, I just want to know how many.
So I probably had about 12 girlfriends or boyfriends before I met Anita.
Do you really, truly love Anita?
Very much. With all my heart.
And how about me? Do you really, truly love me?
Oh, my God. With, like, my heart, the next-door neighbor's heart, the people around the corner's heart, with everything I have, I love you.
Honestly?
Honestly.
Okay. Do you want to ask me anything?
Do you love me?
Oh, stop it. Of course I love you.
There you go.
So, there you go, an indication that moms are going to play a big part in StoryCorps. And since we opened in Grand Central that 6.5 years ago, as most of you know, we expanded a lot. We started these mobile booths that have traveled around the country. We have permanent booths in different cities. And we're working really hard to kind of create a revolution in listening with StoryCorps, to remind people, you know, when you hear these stories, and they've been recorded from every part of the country you can possibly imagine. When we pull a mobile booth into a town and partner with Colorado Public Radio, we hold half of our slots open for outreach to community. So half the slots are for people who listen to the public radio station to make a reservation or hear about us through newspapers. The other half are for people who might not know that we're in town. So we work with juvenile justice organizations or homeless organizations or immigrants' rights groups and bring those folks to the booth. And when you hear one of these stories on Friday morning, almost by definition, you're going to be hearing from someone who's you think is very different than you. But part of the power, I think, of these stories, of a story truthfully told, is that you're going to recognize a little bit of yourself in someone who you thought was so different than you. And that act of recognizing our shared humanity, I think, has the potential to really build bridges and remind us that we should spend a little more time listening to each other and a little less time screaming at each other, and that there is so much more we share in common as a country than divides us. I will start playing stories from the book now. The book is divided into three sections, and the first is called Wisdom. And I'm going to play a little bit of sound from the first story in the book. And this is Nancy Wright, who is interviewed by her son, J.D. Wright. And she wanted to talk about her mom, whose name was Frances Guy Erickson. And this is just a little bit of Nancy's conversation with her son, remembering her mom.
What was your relationship like with her?
We had an interesting time, especially in adolescence. We were pretty compatible up to that point, and then I think we grated on each other's nerves quite a bit. And our relationship really kind of went downhill from there. She was critical of me and very judgment-laden. And finally, when I was about 30, we were together, and it was just a miserable weekend. I felt our relationship was awful. And I told her right before I left that I couldn't deal with that kind of criticism anymore, and it wasn't helping me. And she said that that's what mothers do. And I said I didn't need a mother anymore. I needed a friend, that if she wanted to continue to try and be my mother that way, that I didn't want that, but to call me if she wanted to be my friend. She was very angry and upset, and I kind of almost didn't expect to hear from her because she could be a little stubborn. It's kind of a family trait. And I think about 2 weeks, though, after that conversation, I picked up the phone one day and a kind of small voice said on the other side, hi, this is your friend. And it was. And we stayed friends until she died. With only occasional lapses and critical judgment, but I think I had my lapses too.
There's much more detail in the book than in the audio stories, and Nancy remembers that her mom used to give these huge tips everywhere she went. She always insisted on giving huge tips. And when her mom died, they left a Frances Erickson memorial tip at the lunch they had after her funeral. And I found myself on this book tour leaving these huge tips everywhere I go. And you know what? It actually feels really good, you know? And that's, you know, part of the great thing about this book, I think, is that every story leaves you with something that you can't forget. I have a 2-year-old son, and just the wisdom of these moms and their kind of fierce devotion is just so inspiring and amazing. You know, I talked to the facilitators, who are really the core of StoryCorps, last week before I left on tour, and just asked them. You know, their job is this amazing job. We've had about 100 facilitators who go out on the road and essentially are collecting the wisdom of humanity because of the nature of this job. And I asked them what it was like for them, you know, to listen to these stories of moms. And a lot of them, most of them are it's a very diverse group. We have some older folks. A lot of them are pretty young, just out of college. And I asked, you know, when you hear these mom stories, like, what is that like for you? And they all told me that at the end of the day, they would leave the booth and just pick up the phone and call their mom and call their dad and say thank you and say I love you. And that's kind of, I think that's what I, you know, you write a book like this and then you put it down for 9 months as it comes out and then you pick it up again and read it. And that was my impulse, you know, last week when I picked it up and read it. And I just wanted to call my mom and tell her I loved her, which I did. And actually, I see her book is right there also. So we have, my mom was an editor for many, many years and is an amazing person, and retired and started writing books about families. And she actually has a new book that's coming out next week, and we have dueling readings in New York on the same night, which I'm going to go to hers and then run to mine, and she'll do the same. The second section of Mom is called Devotion, which is another dozen stories of devotion. You know, these are moms being interviewed by their kids, moms being remembered by their kids. And I'm going to play a story from that section. This is Jerry Johnson, who took his mom, Carrie Conley, to the booth in Detroit. Carrie Conley was 80 years old when this was recorded, and he wanted to honor her for her role as a mom. She was a single mother. She brought up six kids in Detroit while working as a tray girl at a hospital in Detroit, delivering food to patients and sometimes working in the kitchen. And this is just an excerpt of their conversation.
We always love Christmas, and I cannot remember one Christmas that I didn't feel like I was the luckiest kid in the world, even though now I realize we had hardly anything in terms of money. How'd you hold that together?
Well, you know, we got one sick day a month, and if I was sick, I would still go to work. I was saving those days for Christmas, and at Christmas time, then they would pay me for those days. And you know, it around the 1st of December, all the rich peoples, they would clear out their children's toy chests, and they would take all these nice toys to the Salvation Army, and I would go there, and I would get me a huge box, and I would go around and pick out nice toys, and I would get that for a couple of dollars, and then I would use the other for fruit and for food. And so it seemed like we had a big Christmas, but I never did tell you it was a Santa Claus, because I said that I cannot give no man credit for what I'm working.
I know I speak for the rest of the kids who aren't here and telling you how much we love you and how much we appreciate the sacrifice that you went through and the guidance and leadership that you are teaching us. And I think it's helping us all be better parents.
You know, my whole heart was my kids, and the Lord blessed all of them, and I'm so grateful.
In the book, Carrie Conley talks about the happiest moment of her life being when she watched her son, Jerry, accept his MD from the Washington University in St. Louis. He now works as a physician in Detroit. I spend most of my time locked up in Brooklyn raising money for StoryCorps, which is a project that gives new meaning to the term nonprofit. But once in a while, I get let out of my cage and can travel around the country and talk about stuff like mom. And the best thing about traveling around is getting to meet folks from the book. And over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to meet most everybody from Mom. And I am so pleased to have Ray Martinez here with us tonight, whose story in many ways anchors the book. It's in the devotion section of the book, and it's the longest story by far. And many people have already said that it's about the most memorable story that they've read in the book. And I'm going to play, Ray is sitting in the back, and I'm going to ask him to come up and speak. But first, I'm going to play a little excerpt from his interview. Ray was brought up in an orphanage here in Denver, and ended up becoming the mayor of Fort Collins, and tracking down his biological mother after he retired as mayor, who was supposed to be here tonight. And I'm so sorry we didn't get a chance to meet her. She's got a daughter who's very ill. But his mom had been told that Ray had died during her difficult delivery in childbirth. And she was quite surprised to meet up with him, although she always, he says in the book, had a feeling that he was alive and would look through orphanages and try to find him. But they reconnected many, many years later. But this is Ray talking about when he was adopted from the orphanage.
When I was 5 years old, I was adopted from the orphanage, and the matron came to my bed, and she picked me up, and she put me over her shoulder, and she said, "We're going to a new home." And when they sat me on the front counter, the matron did that night, my dad looked at me, and my mom looked at me, and I looked at them, and my dad shoved this blue stocking cap over my head, my mom shoved this little toy stuffed dog in my arm, and they swept me off the counter, and away we went. And they took me to my new home on Sycamore Street, and they took me to my bedroom and said, "This is your bedroom, this is your toy box, this is your closet," and everything was, "This was yours," and they never took me back. You know, my mother died in 1994 on Easter night. When my mother passed away, I went through her cedar chest, and guess what I found? My stocking cap and the toy dog that they gave me, the gift, the very first things I ever owned, and to this day, I keep them as a reminder where I came from.
Thank you very much. And I won't take long because this is David's program. But, David, thank you so much for the invitation, first of all, and secondly, for taking the time to record the legacy of people, because there's so many stories to be told, so much that has to be kept. And when we talked about the orphanage, it was right here in Denver. It was the Denver State Orphanage for Neglected and Dependent Children. Some of you who have been around for a long time are aware of that orphanage, but it was built in 1895, very large orphanage, kept kids from infancy to age 19. And they shut down in 1972, progressively shutting down starting in the 60s. And during that time, they processed over 17,000 children in Colorado alone. And when the orphanage finally shut down, what they did with the kids that were 18 and 19 years old, they put them on a bus and took them downtown Denver, right downtown here, gave them a sack of clothes and a stipend of money, and told them they were on their own. Now, that's how things were handled. You wouldn't think that's how it'd be in that time period, but it is. And even my experience in the orphanage, and I'll give a short lesson, I learned three key things in the orphanage which stuck with me all my life, which they say your sharpest learning curve is between infancy and age five, and where you set some of your values in. Well, in the orphanage, you didn't have moms and dads. You had matrons and people that assisted and worked around you. And in our group of kids, and we stayed in Building 13, and we shared everything. That's one of the things I learned about the orphanage, is that you don't own anything. Everything is shared. There's no such thing as being stingy. This is mine, and I want that. I just don't recall any of that. Even when we went outside to play, they bring out a table of coats in our age group, and we just grabbed a coat. Every day you had a different coat. I like to tell people, how many of you got 50 coats in your closets, you know? So it's just the way it was back then, and trying to adapt, trying to leave the orphanage. That was a miracle in itself, because even the orphanage saw that I felt some resistance of leaving the orphanage, because in those days, they would allow you to be checked out like a library book. Parents could take you home, try you out for 2 weeks to see if you were a fit or not. Now, I never remember being in their homes, but I always remember leaving the orphanage, sitting in the front seat of the car, and them making over me, trying to make me laugh, have a good time. But I don't remember being at their home. But the next thing I always remember is coming back, sitting in the back seat of the car by myself, looking out the window. I couldn't wait to get back to the orphanage. And I used to tell myself when I got out of the car, I never want to leave this place again. But yet, it somehow, it worked out. I found some adoptive parents who loved me, took me, swept me off the counter, as you heard in this story, took me home, and now they tried to tell me they're my mom and dad. Well, I didn't know what that meant. And I soon learned that parents, especially moms, it's not defined in the dictionary. It's defined by your behavior, defined how you live and how they're treated. And my mom and I got attached right away. My dad and I had a little rough time because he worked so hard. He worked 7 days a week. So he started taking me to work with him as a little kid, probably, you know, 6 or 7 years old. And I remember one time how I connected and I suddenly realized this is what a father is. This is what a dad is. And I remember riding in his truck, and we turned the corner, and the truck door flew open, and I started flying out that truck door. And when you see blue sky, you know you got a problem. And I remember at the last second, he grabbed my ankle, he slid me back in, and he tucked me under his arm, and he just kind of chuckled. And I thought to myself, that wasn't very funny. But all of a sudden, it dawned on me, that's what a dad is, that's what a father is. They know how to protect you, they know how to comfort you in the nick of time, and they know how to rescue you when you need rescuing. All of a sudden, I realized what a mom and dad was. Was they passed on, and I found my biological mother. What a warming situation. I mean, she hung up on me 3 times when I finally connected with her, because she didn't believe it could be possible. She was told that I had died and that there was no way. And I thought, you know what, I need to still try to make contact with her. I called her that evening, and we made that phone contact. And I told her, I said, her name is Gloria. And I said, Gloria, just listen to me. Don't hang up on me again. And I told her, I said, there's only 2 things I ever wanted to say. And this has been a spiritual prayer of mine all my life, to find my biological mother and just tell her 2 things. And I wanted to tell her these 2 things. And I said, one, that you didn't make a mistake. Life turned out great. I'm happy as it is. You know, there's a great saying, there's 2 great days in your life, the day you were born and the day you found out why. And that's really important. And I told her the second thing that I wanted her to know is I wanted to thank her for giving me life and not taking my life, giving me a chance. And she just, I could tell she was melting. She says, well, I have your numbers, and if I want to pursue this, I'll let you know. and we hung up, and I told her I would never bother her again. Well, I didn't know if that was going to be a year, 5 years from now, or what. But then the next morning, she calls me on my cell phone, and she said, "This is your mom." Most important phrase she could have said. And when she said that, she said, "I want to tell you what happened." And I said, "You don't have to." She said, "No, I want to." And she explained what had happened. She was violated against her will. It was a violent offense. And, you know, and ironically, it was one of her best friends, girlfriend's brother, that assaulted her. And she was overcome by this. And then after years had gone by, she just thought, well, maybe he really is dead. But when we talked, she said, "You know, somehow deep down inside, I always knew you were alive out there. I don't know why." But somehow she knew that. And I have this idiosyncrasy about me, and I even got it today. I always carry a green pen, always writing green. You know, in Spain, green is the color of hope. And, you know, hope to me is what it means to me is that it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. As long as you have hope, then there's always a solution. And I always wrote in green ink. Even in my mayor's office, all the papers I ever signed was always in green ink. I write in green ink, you know. And the first letter my mother ever wrote to me, she wrote to me in green ink. Isn't that ironic? There's a lot of idiosyncrasies like that that I could go on for hours. But obviously, we are connected, obviously. And I found four sisters and a brother that I knew I never had. And then, just as I was telling David earlier, just last night, my mother and I were talking. And she said, "You won't believe what happened today." She's never told the story to anyone. She wouldn't tell it to her best friend what happened because it was a household secret. And she was afraid that her best friend would disown her and wouldn't believe her. And when she told her the story and how it unfolded, her best friend had even guessed what probably happened. And they have bonded together even more. And now her best friend, which would be my aunt, wants to meet me, and we're going to do that in the very near future. So you just heard some unfolding information in the last 24 hours. And one of my best friends that I had in the orphanage, his name is Amos, never knew his last name. I just found out that he lives in Los Angeles, so I'm going to try to reconnect with him as well. But it's amazing how this story's unfolded and that the intentions are there. It's intentional how these things happen, and it's intentional that StoryCorps exists for you, for us, to record our legacy. David, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I think that Ray's story is proof positive that the stories we find all around us are more interesting and more important than John and Kate plus eight or whatever. I don't even know what that is. I shouldn't even say nasty things about it. I'm going to play a story from the last section of Mom. And this section is called Enduring Love. And this is a very sad story. But it's part of what this book is. You know, this is not a Hallmark book. It's not syrupy. It is like our moms. It is fierce at times, funny at times, wise, and sometimes tragic. And this is Myra Dean, who lost her son, Richard Damon Stark, at the age of 9 in 1977. He was sitting on a patch of grass with a friend of his watching the sunset when he was killed. And she wanted to come to StoryCorps to remember him.
People used to ask him what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he used to tell people he either wanted to be a marine biologist or a garbage man. He wanted to be 10, and he didn't make it. A guy had been hot rodding through our neighborhood. The car flipped over, and it landed on Rich. And all I can remember is they had pulled the driver out, and he kept saying, "Oh, my God, what have I done? What have I done?" They put me in a police car, and I just started screaming. And the ambulance driver came to me at the hospital and said there was nothing we could do. He's gone. And I can remember having my back to the wall, and I just slid down on my butt, leaning against the wall. And he said, "Ma'am, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but he was dead at the scene." He'll never know what that meant to me, because one of the things that was the hardest for me was, what if he was suffering and I wasn't there for him, you know? And the worst part is, when you realize you're going to live because you just want to die. I thought I wouldn't live 10 minutes, and I was astonished when I'd lived 10 days and mortified when I'd lived 10 months and not even grateful yet when I had lived 10 years. I was just mostly surprised. And there was no one more astonished that I'd survived it than myself. When you lose your child, it's like somebody has just amputated a huge chunk of your heart. And the difference is people can't see the amputation. I miss him terribly. He was just a happy kid, and it's been a bittersweet thing that he died watching a sunset.
I think that one of the things that I have to say, I've listened to that story once. I could only listen once. I have a 2-year-old kid. I listened to it right before it was broadcast, and but I think part of what StoryCorps does is, remind us how precious every day is and how lucky we are to be alive. And I think at its very core, StoryCorps reminds us that every life matters equally. So I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. And, you know, we really are at the very beginning of starting a movement, we hope, with StoryCorps. And this is, you know, one of those beginning moments. So I hope you'll spread the word about StoryCorps, send people to our website, of course, buy the book. But more importantly, interview someone in your life, listen to these stories, share them, remember that really carefully listening to someone is one of the most amazing gifts you can give to them. So thank you so much for coming. I'm happy to sign books.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.